You're listening to News Radio KMAN. Now back to The Game with Mitch Fortner, David G, and Troy Coverdale.
Boy, what a conversation we had off the air during that break, because I told David G that once upon a time in Bramlage Coliseum, there was a WCW show, which is World Championship Wrestling, pro wrestling, you know, obviously not for everybody, but I mean, my God, we looked up the names that were at that show. I mean, it's a who's who.
Everybody.
Like, it is big time, names.
The WWE / WWF, like, they showed up. Like, some of the names, you're like, oh my God.
Like, Stone Cold Steve Austin was in the main event.
Right. Before he was big. Right.
Against Ricky Steamboat, which is a huge name. Sting, Jake the Snake Roberts, Vader, Cactus Jack, Diamond Dallas Page. Like, you could just roll off all these names, and like, they're all in Bramlage.
Dude, every one of them was in Bramlage.
I told Paul White, who's known as the Big Show, I was like, hey man, did you know you and Steve Austin used to, you guys were in the same arena in the same year before you were a wrestler?
And he was like, what? What? Yeah, sure, I remember. Yeah, it's one of the greatest memories of my life.
One of the things about the concerts that we were talking about earlier, really, that was at the time that K-Rock just got started.
Yeah.
And so
90,
in many ways, that was what helped establish K-Rock.
Man, and they probably had access to all those tickets.
I can confirm that because I also know what others in town had for some tickets.
I tell you what, though, there was, for a short time, like, R.C. McGraw's was really bringing in a lot of concerts for like a year or two.
Uh-huh.
And that was a lot. I mean, that was a blast.
That was cool.
I mean, Saving Abel, like, nobody probably cares about them anymore, but they did have a couple of popular songs.
Really?
And
they were
awesome people.
Yeah.
Like, they took me to their trailer, we're taking swigs of Jack Daniels. Ooh. While they're going over set list stuff. I was like, this is kind of cool behind the scenes of seeing how a band works. They drink and talk chop with the set list.
Nice.
And the singer was trying to clear us, though, because he'd been sick. And I'm like, man, just suck it up. Get out there.
Yeah, get out there. Get out there, man. We demand it.
They let me introduce them twice. That was pretty neat.
Shout out to Nick.
And we got to go, some of us got to go on stage and like sing with them for a song. There's an AC/DC song, Highway to Hell. Yeah, it was a good time.
Dude.
Good time.
That's cool.
By the way, if you've never heard, like, Bramlage Coliseum, if you go on their Wikipedia page, you can find some of the concerts that have been there, like Beach Boys, Def Leppard, Motley Crue, seeing Motley Crue.
Oh, there's another one.
That wasn't the Karabi days, was it?
No, that was the Dr. Feelgood days.
In 90? That wasn't Dr. Feelgood.
Mm-hmm.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was.
1990?
Yes.
Was that the Karabi days, or...
Well, it's when Vince Neil left the band.
Yeah.
I don't think... Man, now you're making me look here. No, Dr. Feelgood was in 89.
And the tour came through.
19...
In spring of 90.
The Dr. Feelgood tour came to Manhattan?
Yes.
Man. That was supposedly their best tour ever. Man, I love Motley Crue. They're the best... Some of the best the 80s had to offer. All right. Mitch Palm, let's fire it up.
You've heard of Ken Palm. Well, that guy. Here's Mitch Palm with tonight's prediction.
See, Ken Palm hasn't seen many concerts.
You know that guy hasn't. You know. He's like, I can't. Why? I've got to break down UTEP versus Winthrop. You know, and you're like, dude, get out of town.
Actually, UTEP taking on Kansas tonight.
Hey, that's right.
That's in Kansas City.
Ken Palm will be there.
Well, in the intro, it said tonight's prediction. It's actually tomorrow, but we're only on for like 22 minutes tomorrow. I have an interview I'm going to record tomorrow that I'm going to play back for that, previewing the matchup with John Steele, who was a beat writer for Marquette men's basketball. But as Mitch Palm does, we take those non-con matchups and we talk about the schools, we talk about the teams. I crunch the numbers by push and click, and we find out exactly what this Marquette-K-State matchup is all about. First, though, we got to look back at history. Mitch Palm loves that history. So Marquette actually started, and it still is, a private Catholic research university, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, started in 1881.
Ooh.
This guy wanted German immigrants to have a proper place to learn about Catholic stuff. Mm-hmm. So he started Marquette. That's pretty much it.
Wow. Marquette for the Germans.
However, right out of the gate here, guys, there's already something that Mitch Palm does not like about Marquette, and that's niche.com is named Marquette the 18th best Catholic school in America as of this year. That's fourth in the Big East.
Wow.
Mitch Palm doesn't like that.
Especially, well, you're talking about a conference that is almost primarily
a lot of
Catholic.
Yeah.
St. John's.
Catholic.
Providence.
Boston College and Providence.
Well, you got Villanova, Georgetown.
That was part of the split when football was kind of being pushed and they were looking at, well, how are we going to do this? Because the Catholic schools predominantly don't have those level of football programs.
That's
Boston,
right.
College
Boston College
comes into
ACC,
mind. And so basically you're talking, you had too many private/public arguments going on.
Wow.
And so that's why the Big East fell out the way it did, where it is the Catholic schools predominantly. UConn now back in the mix as a public, but in general, the basketball-playing Catholic schools, Creighton included.
Wow.
Marquette does get back on the right track with Mitch Palm because the all-time series, the Wildcats and Golden Eagles, they played 12 games. K-State does lead the all-time series 7-5, but the biggest game between these two teams was in the 1977 NCAA tournament. Whoa. That year, Marquette won the championship. They beat North Carolina in the title game, but in the Sweet 16, Marquette beat K-State 67-66.
Oh. How's Mitch Palm feel about that?
Mitch Palm is impressed. You know, okay, Marquette has a national championship. K-State's been to a championship game, but didn't pick up the championship. Even though I do believe now Kentucky has vacated that win. You know, maybe the Cats should claim a national championship.
Slide
that was a
there.
Show back in the day.
Yeah.
That was a whole show back in the day. All right, next on Mitch Palm, Tex Winter. He, at one point, was the head coach of Marquette, and of course was head coach at K-State. However, Mitch Palm does give the advantage here to K-State. He was the youngest coach at Marquette for just a couple of years, 51-53. He did lead them to a 1952 National Catholic Tournament title in 52.
Oh, but, hell yeah.
But you know what? Led the Cats to a couple of Final Fours, eight Big Seven, Big Eight championships. He was head coach a little bit longer, 54-68.
Nice, dude.
We got some famous alumni now from Marquette.
I love this part. Yeah!
Number one on the list, Mitch Palm jumped for joy when he saw this. I'm sorry, when we crunched the numbers, it almost broke down in sparks and flames because it was so overloaded with excitement. Chris Farley.
Oh, wow.
Chris Farley is a Marquette guy. If you know the movie Tommy Boy, when he was at school, that was at Marquette. He was on the rugby team. He had a rugby jacket or shirt or whatever that he wore in the movie.
It's Herbie Hancock.
Yep.
Oh, I love that. That's good.
Also on the list, when it comes to athletics, the big name that jumped out to Mitch Palm, Dwayne Wade.
Oh, man. The way he carried Marquette through the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. Unstoppable. Dwayne Wade, man. What a career. Jeez.
But we're off to a great start there, but take a step back with Mitch Palm because there was a name that Mitch Palm saw and was like, yes, here we go, Bob Odenkirk.
Really?
So Bob Odenkirk, if you don't know, I mean, he's been on a whole bunch of stuff, but what he's most famous for is being Saul Goodman in Breaking Bad, which now has a spinoff called Better Call Saul, by far his biggest role.
Awesome.
But here's the thing. He went to Marquette. He did not graduate. Whoops, Marquette. You're going to lose a couple of points there with Mitch Palm.
You got to throw him an honorary degree.
Interesting that Chris Farley did, and Bob Odenkirk didn't.
Chris
Farley's brother, also a graduate of Marquette.
Wow. A lot of people go to college for 7 years.
Okay, that's about it for the famous alumni. Now, looking more into the team. The head coach at Marquette now is Shaka Smart. K-State has had plenty of experience with Shaka Smart as he was the coach of Texas for a while. 18th head coach in the history of Marquette men's basketball, and he was announced on March 26, 2021. If you listened in the first hour, which if you didn't, podcast page, newsradiokman.com, he's bringing that VCU, that Virginia Commonwealth University style of basketball to Marquette, which you didn't really see that at Texas. But like what Troy also mentioned in the first hour, they're going to press the hell out of you.
Yep.
They're going to try to just cause as much havoc as they can, press Virginia. You know, if you remember those days, which are kind of still around, that was a hell of a time to deal with. But, you know, Shaka Smart at VCU, 163 wins, just 56 losses. They went to five NCAA tournaments, made it to a Final Four. And Bruce Weber says, you know, Shaka Smart going to give him that press. So advantage Marquette in that one with Mitch Palm.
If they can get a shade of the Shaka Smart from VCU, look out, dude. No one wanted to play those guys when he was their coach. Good God.
Mitch Palm also loves that VCU beating Kansas on their way to that Final Four. Marquette right now, they are a 7-2 team. Their losses to really good teams. Number 22, St. Bonaventure, and the number 23, Wisconsin. Wisconsin and Marquette were tied at the halftime break. Their wins, Ole Miss, West Virginia, Illinois, K-State opponents, and they have wins against those teams. They force 15.5 turnovers a game. That's a pretty good number. Now, here is something Mitch Palm doesn't like a whole lot about Marquette, and it's pretty big. They're only 33% from 3-point range. That's not a solid number. K-State is obviously better than that, and they turn the ball over 15 times a game. So what they are good at, they also give back to the other team. Like, they'll just make as many mistakes as their opponent will. So you have the opportunities to, well, you made a mistake here, you can do the same thing to them. You know, you can get the payback. You can redeem yourself against a team like Marquette.
Wow. Is there have we seen a team like that here, recently, where it's just like they create a bunch of turnovers but also turn it over as much?
No. No, we really haven't. Because once Smart made that move to Texas and kind of got away from it as a defensive principal, VCU did not hold to that. Will Wade was there for the 1 year before he got the LSU job. But since that point, they've not been able to replicate it the same way. This is really a trademark of Shaka Smart. But what happens is that players get sped up, and it's on both sides.
Yeah.
So you're really running a chance at causing yourself problems because your guys may not be as fluid with the basketball as you want them to be.
Right.
So where this really does break down, though, I mean, K-State will have to shut down Daryl Morsell, who is the best three-point shooter by far, 44%. He's the second leading scorer on the team. You shut down his potential to shoot the three, and Marquette will really have a tough time hitting the big shots. But K-State's defense, I don't think Marquette has seen a defense quite like K-State's this season. They really haven't. I mean, K-State right now is 22nd best scoring defense in the country. K-State has the 13th best in the country in field goal percentage defense at 36.8%. That is best in the Big 12. KenPom has K-State winning this game at 65%, 75-70. Mitch Palm actually is not that confident, not as confident as KenPom is. It does come down to, will Nigel Pack play? That is a big factor. But Mitch Palm is considering this, crunching the numbers with K-State not having Nigel Pack. They would really have to rely on the defense. Points, a little harder to come by. Mitch Palm has K-State winning at 57%, and the final score is 68-64. K-State picks up the victory.
I like where Mitch Palm's head's at on this one. You do have to crunch those numbers, sans Nigel Pack. I don't think he'll be ready to go. But that being said, great job once again, Mitch Palm. Once again, the numbers crunched perfectly, I would say. 68-64, you said?
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Perfect.
68-64, 57% chance of the Cats of winning tomorrow night in Bramlage. It's also a home game, you know. You got to keep that in consideration as well.
That's big.
All right, still coming up. Number one song of the day, Ask Us Anything. We're going to do Brony of the Week on Wednesday, so we'll have Ask Us Anything since we do have David G here today. But when we come back, the matchup, when it comes to a one-on-one matchup that I think is actually very pivotal when it comes to this game against Marquette tomorrow night, I'll bring that to you when we come back on the game. We just can't get ourselves off the conversation that we had during the top 10 list of the bands and all the performances at Bramlage Coliseum that happened in the late 80s and then through the 90s. I'm looking up set lists now.
Texting a friend of mine who was here in school at the same time as I was and going, hey, man, we are having a serious recollection going right now.
Well, it blows my mind that Bramlage and K-State was able to get Motley Crue and Def Leppard on their biggest tours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because Motley Crue was here for the Dr. Feelgood tour, and then Def Leppard was here for the Hysteria tour.
Jeez.
Which is insane.
Kemper was on its down. Let's be perfectly honest, that no one wanted to go to the Stockyards anymore. And so you didn't have a Kansas City facility. And Wichita had the Kansas Coliseum, which had nowhere near the seating and was outside of town, and people were not fans of the travel to get there to concerts. Bramlage fell in a great spot at that time for tours. And so that's why you saw so many of them come through at that point. Topeka, you had the Expo Center, but again, not nearly the seating as what Bramlage is. By the time that you go through and you add concert seating to Bramlage, you know, you're looking at 16 at the time. Easily, because the building was at 13.5 when they opened. So you add accordingly, you know, floor seating or whatever, and you're pushing 16 as opposed to 9 over in Topeka.
Well, it got me thinking, like, even during the break, you know, like recruiting. You know, you've heard it many times, you know, Manhattan, Kansas is a hard place to recruit to.
Mm-hmm.
It's more than just facilities, you know. It's about the town. It's about the entertainment.
Lincoln was another one. You had the Devaney Center, but they were loath to do a lot of concerts. And you had Pershing Auditorium, which falls into about the same size as what Muni is in Kansas City. So again, where would you put a tour at that point? It just happened to fall where this was the place. Tulsa wasn't a great option at the time. Oklahoma City didn't have a very solid arena at the time. So in many ways, Bramlage became the spot for the Midwest tours.
Oh, wow.
Tour stops, and it was beautiful.
I bet, man, that would have been the time to be alive, at least for concerts around here.
Yeah.
Because that's never going to happen again. You know,
no.
It's expensive to book a name band anymore.
That too. Oh,
extremely
God, yes.
Expensive to bring in those bands.
This is one of the things, and I don't want to get too far off the track with this, but this is actually something when you talk Country Stampede or where I came from in this case, Greeley, and what they do with their annual Greeley Stampede. There was a stint in the late 2000 range where they were in some serious financial straits because of the acts that they were bringing in, and the attendance wasn't keeping up with what they were spending on bands because of those expenses. And, you know, that was a time frame where you had Reba, Brooks and Dunn, Alan Jackson, Tim McGraw, Lady A. You get the point in terms of what those concerts were costing them to bring to Greeley, but they were trying to compete with what Cheyenne Frontier Days does. Cheyenne's a different beast because they've got state funding, and you know that's all. Wyoming's a whole other state altogether when you start talking of those things. But it's a whole other beast when you start talking Cheyenne Frontier Days. It's easy to lose money on concerts nowadays.
Oh, yeah.
Big time.
And so, you know, they had to reevaluate. Well, given what costs are for doing concerts, you also have to be in the right spot, or it becomes even more expensive.
I remember when Country Stampede moved to Topeka a couple of years ago, and also Rockfest in Kansas City, that stopped also kind of at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So I like there was it wasn't a ton of talk, but there was discussion. Like it wasn't really ever going to happen. But I know like people were like asking K-Rock, you guys need to start a rock festival, you know, try to get a rock festival going instead of Country Stampede and bringing all these there's no way that would work. I'm sorry, but it wouldn't work around here. There's just like Rocklahoma, that works, but that they had to establish themselves a long time ago when Rock was very hot. Rock just isn't what it used to be.
Here's also the dirty little secret about Country Stampede's timing. You have it timed where just about where the Greeley Stampede is, and there's a music festival on the western slope of Colorado out by Grand Junction. All that fall in about a 7 to 8 day time frame. So it makes it easy for those bands to be able to hit Grand Junction, Greeley, and then come over to Country Stampede, or do it in reverse.
Man, I miss those days. I miss the Country Stampede days.
I went once. I went to the last one in Manhattan.
I actually laughed when I saw that Bill Snyder and Bob Stoops were together at Country Stampede and wound up on Toby Keith's bus.
Oh, my God.
It's in the book.
What?
It's in the book. It is in his book.
I
because he talked about meeting Toby Keith.
I don't know if we got the full story.
Man,
there's some confidence. Come on. There's no way the full story is in that book.
Maybe not the full story, but he's talking about how he met Toby Keith.
I like it. I just like thinking about Bill and Bob palling around Stampede. He goes, "Hey, you want to go to Toby Keith's? Yeah, let's go."
Right?
Oh, that's awesome.
That is
that's cool.
That I wish I would have known about that. I would have read that far ahead. I would have definitely asked Coach about that. Mm. Oh my God, what a missed opportunity! Hey guys, all right, we're way far behind here. So, when it comes to the Marquette K-State game, there's a matchup in there that I think could be very pivotal, and K-State, I'm not worried about guard play that much. I think they're getting pretty solid guard play. Really not too bad, especially when Nigel Pack is playing. Selton Miguel has been really good. Marquise Noel, you throw him out there, and he's been pretty solid. You hope guys like Luke Kasuki can build off of what he did against Wichita State, turn that 8 points, and maybe have some double-digit points in his future off the bench. That would be ginormous. When it comes to the bigs, K-State is pretty limited. Pretty limited right now. You really just have 1-4, and that's Ish Masood, who's been struggling from the field. He hasn't hit a three in the last three games, and he's a spot-up guy. When he's not hitting those shots, you got to make those shots. Mm-hmm. And then at the five position, you have Casey Ziegu, who's going to start, of course, against Marquette tomorrow. That's a given. Davion Bradford, he's out of shape. You have Carlton Lundegaard trying to come back, and Logan Landers he's playing hard, right? But he's not quite there yet. He has trouble staying on his feet. He's going after rebounds. His limited shots he does get, he's not putting away. But he's an up and comer, in my opinion. He's green. He's really green, but I see the potential. But Casey Ezeagu is the vocal point here. He's got the spotlight. I think he has done so well of stepping up when he's really needing to step up, when he hears it from the coaching staff. Because Davion played four or five minutes against Wichita State, and a lot of that was the Casey Ziegu show. He got the offense really going twice in that game with dunk after dunk after dunk in the first half, and then the post-entry a little bit in the second half. Like, there was a couple of sparks that he added. When his hands are good, the team is good. That's been kind of my motto this week. When Casey's hands are good, the team is good. Because we've seen in the past where the hands aren't exactly grabbing the basketball.
No.
And he's done it twice this year where he's been so solid that he's been a great asset to have at the five. He against Kerqueth is going to be very interesting tomorrow. Kerqueth, he's an older player. He is a transfer from Oklahoma. And so he's played in Manhattan a couple of times. But he hasn't had the biggest success in Manhattan. He's averaging 6 points, 4 rebounds a game this year, averaging 18 minutes a contest. He's made 2 trips to Manhattan. He's never scored more than 5 points. But the thing is, he's a great shot blocker. His hands are good at finding the basketball and making plays. He's very good defender, not so solid offensively. I think Casey has been getting better offensively. Defense, it's about the same. It's not too bad. But that could be a really good battle. That might be a very pivotal ground of where this game could go either way, because Kerqueth does I wouldn't say they have the biggest depth at the five at Marquette, but K-State doesn't really have a whole lot right now anyway. Casey's going to be the guy. You hope Davion can play a little bit more than 5 minutes a game, but hopefully Casey does not get into foul trouble. Because if he does, K-State will have to go to more to Davion. He's going to have to step up. He's a great player. He's got talent. But he's got to get himself into better shape, and he's got to be – he's got to make plays for K-State. But Casey this year, I'm so proud of him. Like, he has proved me wrong. It wasn't not too long ago where I said when he has the basketball away from the away from the hoop, he looks like a newborn colt on ice.
Aww,
even right? In that area of the game, he is really improved. He's not turning over the basketball. He's only had 7 turnovers this year in 7 games. And he's in a game, he's never missed more than one shot. And there's been a couple of times he's been very limited on shot attempts. But he was 5-for-6 against Wichita State, 6-of-7 against North Dakota. Those were those 2 games he had to step up, and he's played his best games.
Played awesome. Listen, Casey, I know you're listening right now. This guy's name sounds like CarQuest, okay? And if you don't if you don't dominate this guy and embarrass him and shame him into leaving the program after this game and like just disappearing into wherever he came from, I'll be disappointed. He is playing at a high level, and you can tell he's confident. And those things that the coaches keep telling him, like, Casey, if you do this and this and this, good things are going to happen. You just have to stay at it and go at it and also stay out of foul trouble, and it's happening. You can see him, like, the wheels turning in his head, like, oh, my God, they're right. I am big and strong and cool. Just keep doing it, buddy, and you're going to get CarQuest on his heels.
I'm not going to lie. When he transferred to K-State, I was not excited at all. Not excited. Coming out of UTEP, only averaging about 3 points a game. I mean, could you blame me for not being too high on him?
No.
Not being optimistic? Like, those small numbers at a place like UTEP and expected to come to K-State to play at a high level, wasn't seeing it. You know, last year, a few moments here and there. This year, I think he's fully exceeded any expectations that we've all had on him so far.
Well, let's bear in mind again, too, you're also talking about that difference of going from UTEP to K-State in the middle of a COVID year where you don't get all of your opportunities to work out and do the things in practice that you would in a normal situation. The offseason this year was a normal offseason, and it has resulted in a dramatic improvement on his part.
Well, let's not forget, he was also hurt last year. I kind of forgot about that. Just reminded myself, he got hurt. He missed like 10 games last year, and he came back and, you know, maybe would play 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe play 10 minutes. It was the Davion Bradford show last year. This year, it's turned into the Casey Easyego show. While Davion, who was sick for a couple of weeks, he's still trying to get into shape.
Mm-hmm. And get both of those guys back on the same page, healthy, ready to roll. Look out, man.
If they can both get rolling, I mean, it's going to be the most depth K-State has had at that position in some time.
Right.
All right, when we come back, it's time for the number one song of the day on the game. Yes, from 1973, Lean On Me by Bill Withers. 3 weeks at number one.
Sometimes in our lives,
American singer, songwriter, musician from Slab Fork, West Virginia.
Damn! Slab Fork, West Virginia. Who's the notable people from Slab Fork other than Bill Withers? Nobody.
I bet the ribs are good at Slab Fork. Well, before he was a musician, he was a Navy guy. Left the Navy in 65. He went to L.A. to start a music career. Did not record his first song until he was 32 years old.
Wow.
And there's actually a documentary about him that was released in 2009 called Still Bill. Inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame in 2005, Rockwell Hall of Fame in 2015.
Nice.
Oh, it's not that part of the song yet. Okay. Unfortunately, he died of heart complications in L.A. back in March 30th of 2020, not so long ago, at the age of 81.
R.I.P.
8 studio albums, 6 top 40 hits. This is his only number one. It's from his second studio album, Still Bill.
Love this song.
Is this it? Here it is.
Call on me, brother, when you need us.
all need somebody to lean on. I just might.
So Bill Withers' childhood in the coal mining town of Slab Fork was the inspiration for this song, which he wrote after he had moved already to L.A. He found himself, he was missing the community, the strong community ethic of his hometown. He had lived in a decrepit house, poor section of town. He went on to say in an interview that he bought a little piano. He was sitting there just kind of running his fingers up and down the piano. And in the course of doing that, the tune just came to mind. And then the phrase "Lean on Me," just thought, "Hey, sounds good with this. Dude, let's roll with it." Just came to him.
That's crazy, man.
So during my research, it turns out that piano teachers, this is one of the first songs they teach their student, because all you have to do is just put your fingers in one place and just move your fingers up and down. It's pretty simple.
Wow. I love learning something new during the, especially this part. This is awesome. Okay, good.
In the 500 greatest songs of all time from Rolling Stone, they place Lean on Me at, you guys want to take a guess?
Yeah, $4.99. They don't know what they're talking about ever.
$3.61.
You guys are way too high. $2.08.
Ah, very good.
Okay. $2.08.
Okay. That's good. That's good.
That's number one song.
Bill Withers, though, Use Me Up. I'm a real big fan of that song. Yeah, you know.
I don't know if I've ever heard that one.
To use me.
What was his other song? Oh, my God.
Use me up.
No. I got to look it up. I don't know why I'm blanking on this.
Come on.
It was another big song. It wasn't as big, but it was pretty big. I'm going to find it here in a second. Ain't No Sunshine.
That's a good song.
Why can't I think of that?
Great song.
Yeah, that, I like it more.
It's a great song.
All right. Ask Us Anything when we come back.
Geo.
Before we get to questions from David G, just this conversation we had off air, which is what a hell of a show we're having, both on and off the air. You know, take this one home, discuss it with your family, because it's a big topic. Doobie Brothers, with or without Michael McDonald? That's a
And discuss that with your friends. And if you don't know who he is, run away from home because you're a weirdo.
Discuss amongst yourselves.
Yes. Let's do this. Ask you anything. We're on this and we can't get off of it, so let's go with it. What's the worst concert you've ever seen in your life?
Skillet.
Skillet. Wow. I've never seen Skillet. You don't know Skillet?
No.
That Christian rock band that came out like 2009, 2010-ish.
Oh.
Gosh, what was their big song? They had like a song right away that was like pretty big.
They were opening for Toby Mac.
What?
Toby Mac was good.
Yeah.
Was solid. But Skillet was horrendous.
Ooh. Skillet getting some heat here. What about you, Mitchell?
Big Steve, do you know Skillet?
I do.
What was that song that came out off that off like their first album? Or it wasn't their first, but it was like the Mummy cover.
Yeah. Monster.
Is that what it was?
I feel it deep within. I must confess that I feel like a monster. Isn't that one?
Nice job, Big
Steve.
Yeah,
that might be it.
I like that.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, that is it. Okay. Yeah, Skillet. I never really liked those guys.
I saw Van Halen, their first reunion tour with David Lee Roth.
Ooh.
And it was in Kansas City at the Staples, or the thing. And David Lee Roth and Eddie Van Halen were battling with each other. They were cussing each other out on the stage.
Really getting mad at each other. I sure would love to see that.
They canceled the tour the next day, and Eddie Van Halen entered rehabilitation.
Oh, man.
He had fallen off of the wagon.
So there are two concerts that strike me from Kansas City history. The first would be that one, because it sent Eddie Van Halen into rehab.
Yeah.
The other would be when Derek Thomas was still with us. And Hank Williams Jr. was well off of his wagon and was performing at then known as Sandstone and was too drunk to do more than three songs. Derek had to actually lead him off the stage.
Wow. Oh, boy.
That was a big to-do back then.
I've never seen anything like that. I've seen Puddle of Mud with what's his name? So Wes Stantlin.
Yes.
Sober. You know, or at least seemed sober. He was drinking a Coors Light. I met him after the show, and he was drinking a Coors Light. You know, I was like, right. He seemed
you're
fine,
cool.
though.
You're cool.
I was like, hey, you look like that guy Edge from WWE. He's like, yeah, I get that a lot. I'm like, no, you don't.
Oh, no, he tried to play cool, didn't he? Oh, no.
I also said he looks like Jay from Jay and Silent Bob. That's He's like, true. Yeah, I get that a lot. let's see. Mine is Iron Maiden. I saw them Ooh. Like 4 or 5 years ago. Bruce Dickinson, he likes the temperature in the room a little bit up for his vocals. And he sounded like crap.
Really? It's
terrible.
Oh, no.
Ghost opened for them. Ghost is one of my favorite bands, and they Ghost. Killed it.
Yeah,
they were amazing.
Yes.
Iron Maiden did not sound good. Left before the encore, because a lot of people were leaving before the encore.
Whoa.
And they were playing a lot of new songs, and that sucked too. Like, one of the guys, he's like leaving. He turned around to my group. He's like, I've been to 50 Iron Maiden shows. This is by far the worst I've ever seen. I was like,
whoa.
I'm glad I'm not the only one.
Yeah.
Big Steve, you got an answer?
So while I was a teenager, I don't remember where
Aren't
I
you
saw
still
him.
A teenager?
No, I'm in my mid-20s.
Go ahead.
Okay. Anyways, I went to a Green Day concert. Sound tech could not figure out his job at all. Constant feedback the entire 2-hour show.
Ooh.
And I couldn't enjoy it. Because every
sucks.
Time it was.
Where was it?
I don't quite remember. It was like while I was 14.
Hmm. See, Green Day is one of those bands, they kill it every time. They sound amazing.
Yeah.
Billy Joe Armstrong still sounds amazing. That's too bad.
Not that day. Big Steve says these guys stink.
Anytime they were starting to get on a good track, like, okay, it sounded good. The levels would start to come up, and then,
I saw Hell Yeah at Rockfest. For those that don't know who that is, they have like half a Mudvayne. You probably don't know who Mudvayne is. anyway, like every 10 seconds, the entire sound would go out.
Oh.
Ooh. And they would lose lights. Like everything would just break down at once, and then it would come back, and then it would go. Disappear. Then come back. It was so weird.
Sounds like some faulty network cables.
Dude, I'd throw up if that. I'm leaving.
They did play at R.C. McGraw's.
Yeah,
that was
ass.
Incredible.
Yeah, awesome.
And old Sean Ryan got us in the back to meet the band.
Very nice. What's the torture song? We had a story about down in Oklahoma. These guys got in trouble because they made all these. Inmates listen to Baby Shark on loop for like 3 straight hours. What would be your torture song if someone was going to tie you up?
Well,
and
that
make you
Firefly
listen?
Song that Steven loves.
I didn't say I loved it. I said it was an okay song.
Mm-hmm. Owl City or something
it's
like
Owl
that.
City.
Yeah, that's probably it.
Barney's theme.
Oh, man. You know,
get ready for that one.
Absolutely. We got a lot of people saying that. A lot of people were like, I am permanently scarred from that.
One of the best Saturday Night Live skits ever saw. Charles Barkley playing basketball with Barney.
Ha ha! Elbowing him in the head.
I've never heard that one. I've seen that one before.
At the end of it, Barney's eyes hanging off by a spring, and there's foam coming out of his costume.
He is not a role model.
Do you ever, J.B. Smooth? He was on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah.
One of the best skits I've ever heard of that never happened, he came up with the idea when Tom Brady hosted to have a skit of the first time ever a football player slapping another one on the butt. Like, that would have been hilarious,
wow,
but Lauren Michaels, he didn't want anything to do with it. I'm like, you're kidding me.
Come on.
That would have been so good.
Been perfect.
J.B. Smith, one of the funniest people ever. How much time we got, Steven? Bye.